I've just been corresponding with Ajahn Pasano, who is the abbot in Abhayagiri. Good friend. We have three Canadian monks, senior monks, Ajahn Pasano, Ajahn Tiradamo, Ajahn Viradamo. We were all ordained in 1974. And so there's three Canadians there holding the fort. Ajahn Pasano is the abbot of Abhayagiri Monastery in California. Ajahn Tiradamo now, he's retired. But we've been corresponding about trying to get Lompa Liam to visit us in North America. Lompa Liam is the abbot of Ajahn Chah's monastery. And before Ajahn, I don't know if Ajahn Chah fell ill in about 1981 with a series of strokes. And so he was bedridden for 10 years. And he had no speech, minimal movement, and that movement in the, I forget which side it was, that movement eventually faded to no movement. And so he was taken care of. A kuti was built for him, a cabin, like, almost like a hospital room in the monastery. And he was taken care of by the monks for 10 years. And they had a team of, I'm also reading a book on elderly care and just thinking about Ajahn Chah's karma. He had a team of five monks and one novice, or four monks and one novice, who would care for him for 12 hours. And then that team would be taken over by another team for 12 hours, and they did this in 2 week shifts. And they had about a dozen groups like that. And they took care of him like that for 10 years. And very loving, very, very loving, very caring. And then at 5 in the evening, he'd be wheeled out in a wheelchair, and people would come and pay their respects. And Ajahn Pasano would bring all the, or a lot of the Western monks from Wat Nanachat, which is near Ajahn Chah's monastery, and they would chant Ajahn Chah's favorite tune, Vipassana Bhumi, it's Pali, his favorite chant. And he would be there, he could maybe move a hand, not move much. And Ajahn Pasano, I think, did that for about 8 years. Every week or something like that. So there's tremendous devotion around this man and caring for him. And before he fell ill, he asked Ajahn Liam to be the abbot of Wat Bapong. And Lompa Liam didn't really want the job, but he took it on. And soon after that, I mean, Lompa Liam was already living there, but soon after that, then Lompa Cha fell ill. So Lompa Liam was there during the transition when Ajahn Chah was ill. And that was a very strange situation because Ajahn Chah was there, but not there. But that gave a time for the Sangha to kind of figure out, okay, how can we be a unified Sangha without the great teacher? And any charismatic teacher has the problem of who's going to inherit this, right? And usually situations just fall apart. But the Sangha at Wat Bapong had these sort of strange 10 years to try to get it together as a group. And it wasn't easy because there were these men who were abbots of monasteries, they're pretty strong characters. And in each monastery, they're virtually unquestioned in Thailand. They just have their own authority. So you get these strong characters together, so how are we going to do this? And anyway, they pulled it together, and it's a really strong Sangha now. But so Lompa Liam is a different personality than Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah was very charismatic. Always, when he was sitting there, he was the center of attention, and he was always in charge and like engaging people and challenging them, joking with them. Lompa Liam's much more quiet. So I was at a dana in where's the Queen's in England? Queen's Palace. There were not Buckingham Palace, but outside Windsor. Near Windsor Castle, a gentleman has a house there. We had about 20 or 30 monks for a house blessing, and Lompa Liam was there. It was interesting, before the, or after the blessing, I forget what, there was sort of a half hour of nothing happening, and Lompa Liam was seated on a chair, and everyone's around him. And he's doing nothing. It's great, just nothing. Just... And you know, when you have a great teacher, you think, oh, give me teaching, right? Do something. And he's just, And then everyone started to talk around him. And he can teach, you know. But it was interesting to see the whole different personality, how a different personality. So personality is a characteristic of our experience. But we say it's not self. You know, it's just personality. And it's interesting to look at your personality as not you. It's kind of interesting, like, you know, one person is extrovert, one's introvert, whatever, and this is the way it manifests. But usually, quite often, our personalities manifest from fear or from desire, whatever. And this man I saw, I said, Lompa Cha could be very empty, and you can sit beside him, there's no one there. It's really like, there's a body there, but where's the person? And then there would be a need for him to speak with someone, engage with someone, help them with a Dharma question, and the person would arise. It's interesting how personality can be a function of context and compassion rather than a function of sort of a need to express yourself from fear or whatever. So Lompa, there's a very good book called No Worries, which leads me to this gadget. And it's some teachings from Lompa Liam, and in it is a short biography about him. And I was wondering if it'd be worthwhile to read the period of his intense meditation enlightenment. And I thought, well, is this really worthwhile? I thought, well, I'm a kind of guy, because I'm in the business, right? I like a great potter, I suppose, if you see a great work of pottery, you know, you want to see, you know, who are the great potters, and or if you're a therapist, maybe, who are the great therapists, or a visual artist or whatever, who are the great... So I'm sort of into this business. So I love to read about like Merton or Rumi or any of the great greats. So this is one of my great greats. So I thought I'd just see if I could share a bit of that with you. Got the wrong number. So this is called From No Worries, and I'll just skim through it, but it's quite stunning, his realization. And it gives you a sense of... I use this also just to reflect, who was the Buddha as human? Like this, obviously the Buddha didn't look like this, right? So there's mythology and there's art and there's all that. Things that culture puts on top of a great being for sake of various cultural reasons. But you know, who was this person, the Buddha? And this sort of gives me a taste of how it might have been. Lompa tell, so all senior monks are called Lompa, by the way. I'm not the only Lompa around now. And that Lompa means venerable father or venerable grandfather. Don't you forget. Okay. Lompa tells about his practice when he first arrived at Wat Nong Bapong. Wat Nong Bapong is Ajahn Chah's monastery. I tried to put much effort into developing sati and sampajanya. Sati and sampajanya are often used as a pair. Sati refers to mindfulness and recollection, while sampajanya refers to all-around awareness and clear comprehension. So this is a pair you find a lot in the text, sati, sampajanya. I tried to put much effort into developing sati and sampajanya. This means to observe one's own mind all the time, without interruption and without letting attention slip. Looking at one's state of mind throughout the day and night, trying to stop the usual proliferations of thoughts in each and every moment, each and every posture, whether standing, sitting, walking, or lying down. I try to watch the mind, focus it and investigate it. When one examines one's mind in this manner, one gets to see what it's like. When there is the feeling of liking something, one immediately knows that the mind experiences attraction. And when the feelings of dukkha arise, one knows that the mind experiences dukkha. And we'll skip forward a bit. to this one. I came to Wat Bapong with a mind that was interested in the training, practice, and development of myself. I took some special practices all for myself. I undertook, for example, after the group meditation meetings in the evening, I took the opportunity to put forth some more effort in the practice, trying to develop diligence as a habit. I didn't socialize, I didn't relate to other monks, I didn't speak with anybody. In that rainy season, we were about 50 altogether, if I remember correctly, 47. So I think this was 1969. Sometimes when I felt confused, in a strange mood, or wasn't feeling well, I used the technique of staring at a kasina, or an object. But the focus of my kasina wasn't anything extraordinary. I simply looked intensely at the skeleton, and there's a, in many of our monasteries, there's a skeleton hanging. We use it for contemplation. A skeleton which was hanging in the sala. I stared at the skeleton in a way that gives insight into the nature of the material components of the body. I took the image of the skeleton for contemplation. If one sees images like these, feelings of diligence and motivation in the practice will arise. One won't forget where one is at and what one is doing. There's a feeling of continual wakefulness in all postures. One feels that one has found a place of independence all by oneself. In sitting meditation, one is able to sit continually, but without falling asleep. There is mindfulness and awareness. One is able to determine how to spend one's time appropriately and won't let it pass by uselessly. So the man's very diligent, to say the least. Very, very diligent. This what precedes this is a lot of practice, and now we're coming to these experiences. The rains retreat is a time when the monks of a monastery usually intensify their efforts in practice. Lompo's high aspirations and motivation led to a powerful experience at the beginning of the rainy season, of which he tells, "I experienced something stranger than anything I had ever experienced before. From the beginning of the rains retreat on up to the second month, I felt great faith in the practice. There was no decline, no thoughts of discouragement at all in my practice. The practice went well the whole time, although there were a few experiences of the mind getting involved with desires or defilements, but they weren't very strong. Possessing mindfulness in this way seemed sufficient for providing clear guidelines in the practice. From then on, the feeling of having to think about things in various ways became less. The thinking mind that goes into all directions felt like it had no strength. It abated and retreated more and more until it was in a state which one may say wasn't dangerous anymore. Around the middle of the rainy season of the year 1969, Lompo Cha encouraged the monks to practice with special intensity. They weren't supposed to speak to each other, and the communal morning and evening meetings for chanting and meditation were cancelled. Lompo Cha saw that it was time to give the monks more opportunity to do practice on their own. So Lompo Liam increased his efforts, and as he did so, results became evident. On the 9th of September, around 10 p.m., he experienced an immense transformation in his mind. He had a feeling of extraordinary brightness and happiness, of which he reports, "It is impossible to describe this kind of happiness to someone else. It is impossible to make someone else know and understand it. It isn't the happiness of getting things according to one's wishes, and not the happiness because things are agreeable. It's the kind of happiness that goes beyond these two. Walking is happiness, sitting is happiness, standing is happiness, and lying down is happiness. There is the experience of delight and joy all the time. Furthermore, one is able to uphold the knowledge in one's mind that this happiness arises completely by itself and eventually will vanish by itself. Both sukha and dukkha in an experience like this are still entirely impermanent states. I was able to maintain the knowledge of this fact all the time. In every posture, standing, walking, sitting, and lying down, there was a continuous and equal experience of happiness. This state was the same whether I was doing sitting or walking meditation. If I were to describe the mind in this state, one would say there is brightness, but the word bright actually doesn't describe correctly what the experience is like. It is as if there is nothing that can make the mind get involved with anything. This experience lasted for a day and then changed again. Then the mind became utterly peaceful, not at all exhausted, tired, or sleepy, but filled with clarity, radiance, and coolness, imbued with various kinds of delight and rapture. This experience lasted completely without reference to time. It was truly timeless. The same feeling continued on through all the four postures. Eventually I asked myself, what is this? And the answer was, a mode of the mind. It is like this in and of itself. When there is happiness, we simply take it as happiness. It is simply a matter of happiness. When there is peace, we simply take it as a matter of peace. And we just look at our happiness on and on, and we just look at our peace on and on, unremittingly. Eventually, on the evening of the 10th of September, a change to something new that Lompa hadn't experienced before took place. A feeling of weariness, frustration, and fatigue took over. Whenever he sat or walked, he felt sleepy. Even after he got up, after having rested, the tiredness remained. In each posture, he felt completely exhausted. It got to the point where he fell asleep while he was doing walking meditation and ran into some thorns. His whole face became scratched and sore. At least the sleepiness will disappear now, he thought. But, you get the feeling, huh? But the fatigue continued to remain as strong as before. Still, he endured, telling himself that it is natural to face obstacles in practice, which to some extent everybody needs to pass. With these reflections in mind, he understood that he needed to look at this tiredness that previously hadn't been present. After all, this fatigue just arose, so it was impermanent too. Using this insight, he attempted to maintain awareness of the sleepiness. On the 11th, Lompa experienced another change, namely a great peace and happiness returned to his mind. In all four postures, there was clarity and gladness. Simply being by himself was very pleasant. Nothing could intrude and stir up his mind. External objects impinging on the mind just couldn't reach it. When working together with the monks and novices during chores, although he was together with others, he felt the same as if alone. He wasn't interested in what they were chatting about. The next day passed with the ongoing happiness and peace continuing as if it was a normal and ordinary experience. With unceasing attention, Lompa continued to look at both his mind and the objects of his mind. When the evening of the 12th approached, he started to question himself, why do we actually practice? What's all this practice for? And the answer arose, we don't practice for anything, we practice for the sake of practice. Whatever it will lead to doesn't matter at all. Our duty is to practice, so we practice, and try to maintain mindfulness and awareness with it. In each moment, we keep teaching ourselves. Whatever we are doing, we try to have mindfulness and awareness. Whether we are walking to or fro, we keep everything in a state of perfect balance. Now, this is interesting. Finally, I felt I had done enough walking meditation for that day because I became quite tired and my feet already hurt very much. The bones of my feet felt like they were piercing through the skin, as I had been walking the whole day and night without rest. Yeah. Ooh, I get tired after 45 minutes. The man is stunning. But it is also normal that feelings change again. So I thought, it's really enough walking meditation for today. I went up to my hut, put on my robe with the right shoulder open and the outer robe folded over the left shoulder, sat down facing east, the same direction as Lumpo Cha's hut, thought of my teacher, and started meditating. The meditation was very peaceful, and the same reflection as before came up in Lumpo's mind. We don't practice for anything. We practice for the sake of practice. Keeping this teaching in mind, I kept on meditating. Normally, I would sit meditation until 10 or 11 p.m. and then stop to have a rest. But on this day, I continued sitting for about 8 hours without moving or making the slightest change in posture. With this experience of peace, the mind changed. The feeling of peacefulness shot up and pervaded throughout the whole body as if something were taking hold over it. It felt cool, a coolness that suffused the whole body, so very cool, an experience of the whole body becoming completely light and at ease. The head felt so cool the whole day and night as if there was a fan blowing over it, cool, peaceful, quiet, and still. Cool is a very good feeling in Thailand in the hot weather. No experience of thoughts at all, and no clue at all where they had disappeared. Everything silent completely. It felt totally quiet. The only experience left was that of utter peace and stillness. The body felt tranquil, cool, and light. This experience continued on throughout the whole year, not just for a day or two. In fact, it has continued on unchanging for many years, all from that one go. There is the state of coolness, as if the brain, whether sitting or lying down, coolness in every position. All worries, concerns, or similar thoughts from the thinking mind are totally gone. Thinking in this or that direction ceased. All quiet, just like a forest where there isn't the slightest sound of any bird singing. Truly quiet, no wind blowing at all, just ongoing tranquility and peace. It feels like there are no sankharas, no proliferations of the mind. All the suffering that arises with defilements that had bothered me before, the defilements concerning the other sex or all kinds of ambitions that I had before, I don't know where they all disappeared. Seeing somebody, I just had the feeling of seeing it as absolutely normal. To see a person as simply a person, just that much. No beautiful persons, no ugly persons. People simply would be specifically the way they were. This is the kind of peace and tranquility that arose. I don't know what it was, but I also didn't care what it was. Also knowing it is like this by itself in just this way. It is like this through peacefulness and tranquility. There isn't anything to be concerned about as far as how various things exist. As concerns dukkha, I don't know what dukkha is like. As concerns laziness, I don't know what laziness is like. Questioning myself about laziness, there wasn't any. Questioning myself about dukkha, there wasn't any. The feeling inside my heart was exactly like this. I try to recall and pin down that which is called dukkha. What is it? I really don't know. I only know how they discern the meaning in terms of conventional language, because dukkha is just something created by common conventions. When the mind has no dukkha, all conventions whatsoever don't exist in the mind. And the experience of this feeling has lasted on continuously all the time since then. There has been no change all the way up to the present day. The same state still lasts on and has been stable, continuous, and without changes.
Whoa.
So, you know, you think that like the Buddhism, like I think one of the reasons I read this is because Buddhism gets accused of being just about suffering. And this isn't about, you know, this is about liberation from suffering. That's very important to realize. And there are levels of that realization, you know, where we liberate the mind from minor things or major things. And the interesting thing about Lompo Liem is that he is the abbot of our biggest monastery. He's also a builder. So 2 years ago, he organized the building, and he was working in the concrete of the new meditation hall at the internet in the Western Monastery. He's built this massive hall and eating hall, because on the 16th of January we come together in a memorial for Ajahn Chah. And last year there were 800 monks and 6,000 lay people. And he's the center of all this. So, you know, that sounds like he can't do anything, but he's actually, an architect came and looked at the skeleton of the building that he was putting up. And it is massive. It's like half a football field or something. It's huge. And the architect says, "Can I see the drawings of this?" And Lompo said, "What drawings?" He just knocked it up. And he said, "Well, I think you better put more steel up there." So they put more steel up in the, because the tiles were a bit heavy. But so he's like, worldly wise, he's very, very competent, does a lot. And yet inside, and there's no display, you know, there's no kind of charismatic display of this peacefulness. But when you're with him, and you just abide in that kind of welcoming, you know, you get a deep, deep sense of it. So he's, you know, he's like the Da Vinci of kind of of Buddhist practice. And I think it's important that we do see that there are these great spiritual beings, because I think it's very hopeful for me that there are, you know, fantastic beings. But then if we just compare ourselves, I mean, if I compare myself to that, I'm Mickey Mouse, right? So that's a danger. So we want to aspire to the kind of deepest possibility, but then we have to work with our own karma, you know, whatever strengths and weaknesses that we have. But, you know, just that, when I read that, one of the things that comes through is not just the profundity of his, because I only read this about 4 years ago, I didn't realize where he was at. And then he's, since 69? Because I was there in 70, from 73 to 77. And, you know, I thought he was impressive, but I had no idea. Because he wasn't advertising, just quietly getting on, building buildings and mucking around with cement. But what he says is we practice for the sake of practice. You know, it's like, that's what I've been trying to indicate, just knowing the way things are. Not, so I'm using all this language, non-resistance, non-anticipation presence. We practice for the sake of practice. The rest should unfold. If it unfolds like that, good on you. You'll be teaching the next retreat. And I'll be sitting there. But whatever, you know, whatever practices we have. So let's stretch the legs and do some sitting practice.